then the right side of the body, and then the left side.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as this ghusl by way of immersion is concerned, of course, just like diving in underwater, you have to immerse your head, your body, all parts of your body, in an instant underwater, so that water covers all parts of your body in an instant. That's called ghusl ihtimas.
The Office of Ayatollah Sistani is currently providing the following services. 1. Board of Istifta, replying to religious questions. 2. Helping the poor, needy, homeless, and those who have suffered losses by earthquakes and floods. 3. Sending books for people who want to understand and learn Islam. 4. Hajj delegation. 5. Sending preachers. Board of Istifta is a link between Ayatollah Sistani and people. It provides them with answers to questions pertaining to religious, ideological, social, and educational matters in accordance with the verdicts and rulings of Ayatollah Sistani. For more information, visit the website of Ayatollah Sistani at www.sistani.org. You can also ask your questions through the following email, english@sistani.org.
Is there, Sheikh, any kind of preference over which ghusl, either by way of...
Well, dear listeners, here we interrupt the normal course of our program to have the live coverage of the leader of Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei's speech on the eve of Iran's 13th presidential election. Let's take a listen.
Dignity and the birth anniversary of Imam Reza, peace be upon him. I congratulate the dear nation of Iran and all the... enthusiasts of that Imam. And unfortunately, we have been deprived of his pilgrimage for a while now. And may God, due to his intercession, may God grant his blessings upon this nation. And also, may God grant his blessings. Today, I merely wish to speak about the topic of elections, and in less than 48 hours, there's going to be an event in the country that determines the fate of the nation, and that is the presidential elections, and also the city and village council elections. The destiny of the country in all arenas, including economy, culture, security, health, at a particular juncture, relies upon the action that the nation performs on Friday. Through your presence, through your votes, you will actually determine the destiny of the country in major areas. The great task of the people is the participation, and also the type of participation and the type of choice that the people make. And may God provide us with guidance. May he guide our hearts in order to be able to have a good performance in this field. In one of the recent statements, I did mention that people's participation in the Islamic Republic establishment has a firm document. It's not just a political matter. And of course, there are political advantages for people's participation, but what matters the most is the philosophy behind people's participation in this establishment. In other words, in the Islamic Republic, Republic is one part and Islam is another part. If the Republic aspect is overlooked, then the Islamic Republic will not realize. Of course, from the political viewpoint and its political implications, there are many fruits that I will later mention. For this, exactly for this reason, all the satanic and powerful focal points in the world and the satanic circles in the world, those who oppose the Islamic Republic, they particularly oppose the elections. In the past decades, it's always been the same. Their media apparatus, their political tools were aimed at tarnishing people's mind. And if possible, they have been after interfering in the elections in order not to allow the glory of the elections to be put on display. But in the past years, all the elections have taken place on time, and there was not even a single day of delay, and the people have come to the ballot boxes and cast their votes. Of course, they have launched negative propaganda sometime before the elections, and even after the elections, they have always continued their negative propaganda. Perhaps you'll find no country in the world where the elections have been targeted so much by the enemies. And in the elections on Friday, you see that for several months, American and British media, and also the mercenaries that are operating under their banners in these media, they are killing themselves in order to somehow put the elections to question and undermine people's participation. And somehow level allegations against the Islamic Republic elections, and they are uttering words and making various statements in this regard. Their aim is to make efforts not to have the elections performed in the suitable manner. In other words, to distance the people from the establishment because lack of participation by the people means the people being distanced from the Islamic Republic establishment. That's their objective. The people did not, of course, did not listen to them. And there are certain groups, I'm not referring to them because they are the ones who are repeating their statements, either in the press or these days in cyberspace. They are repeating the same statements. Regardless of those groups, the people have shown that they have always acted in contravention with the enemy's wishes. And with the grace of God, the same thing will happen this time, and hopefully, God willing, the people will participate, and this will give more prestige to the Islamic Republic establishment. The fact of the matter is that in the politics of the Islamic Republic establishment and also the events related to political matters, there are certain realities, and there should be an approach superior to political tastes. For example, the funeral procession of Martyr Soleimani, that was a major event. So there was no talk of political tastes or inclinations, and all people participate. The same is true about the elections. There's no talk of political tastes, and all people must participate because the social system of the country needs such a participation, and this participation does affect it. and I will refer to those implications. I will touch upon points about the significance of people's participation. But before that, allow me to mention this verse from the Noble Quran. That's verse 20 of Bara'at chapter. The theme of the verse is that any action by you that disappoints the enemy, this is considered as an action that will be rewarded by God. So there are the enemies of religion and Islam and the enemies of Iran strongly oppose the elections. So the act of elections is considered as a good deed. All those who are after performing good deeds, they should know that participation in the elections is considered as a good deed. And now the points that I wish to mention, there are a few points that I'm going to elaborate. The most important point is that the election indicates people's presence on the scene. What does it mean? It means that the Islamic Republic establishment is supported by the people. This contributes to the strength of the, has a uniquely contributes to the strength of the country and establishment, and there's no power superior to people's participation. Nothing will add to country's strength. Of course, we do have military tools that we consider them as tools that add to the country's power, but nothing can be compared to people's participation, and in its and the people's participation will empower this system and establishment in its true sense. And those who make fallacies, and you see that, unfortunately, you see certain statements made in the press and the cyberspace, there are fallacies made about the elections. Those who make such statements about the elections aimed at disappointing the people, they are actually after undermining the establishment and the external foes who firmly oppose the elections. They are after undermining the establishment. They know that if there is less participation and if the country is weakened, then they can cause insecurity in the country. They can turn the country into a scene with, where the terrorists are present. And in this way, they seek to undermine people's participation. Of course, they are not saying this explicitly, but you can just understand this concept from what they say. They do not want people's participation in order to weaken the establishment and disrupt the affairs of the country and in order to interfere in the country and turn the country into a place for their mercenaries. That's the first point. The second point is that if we have less participation by the people, then we'll have more pressures by the enemy. So, in its true sense, these two are interrelated in an opposite way. If we have less participation, that means that there's going to be more pressures exerted by our foes. So if, speaking of pressures, one can refer to economic pressures. If we want to reduce or eliminate these pressures, the solution is to increase people's participation and and show to the enemies that the people are present on the scene. The other point, which is also of significance, is that the president who is going to be elected on Friday, if he's elected with a great number of votes, if he has a landslide victory, he is going to be a more powerful president, and he can accomplish major tasks. Thank God the country has great power, and there are many possibilities and capacity and opportunities in the country. In order to benefit from these opportunities, there's a need for strong persons and hardworking and powerful individuals. Now, regardless of personal features, such a strength is gained by the president from the people, is gained from people's participation. If there is a good level of participation by the people, and if the president is elected in a landslide victory, that will give more strength to the president and will enable him to better make use of these capacities. The other point is the sound process of elections. Fortunately, in the past years, our elections have been sound and healthy. Those who make objections, there may be a minor disruption, but in general, the elections have been healthy and strong. And a clear proof for this is that in the past decades, in the course of presidential elections, the chief executives who had come to power had different political tastes and inclinations. This indicates that there have been healthy elections, and the elections were not subject to any particular political taste. But the elections have been held based on the law, and the presidents who have come to power have enjoyed various political tastes. Therefore, the elections are quite healthy, and when there's talk of competition, they are competitive. You've seen the televised debates, and I do have some remarks about the debates, and if I were alive, I would talk about them after the elections. But the debates indicated that there has been rivalry and competitions, and each of the candidates have their supporters. And this is also part of the clear realities related to our elections. Of course, the enemies, since the start of the revolution, since the day of the Islamic Republic referendum, with more than 98% of votes, the enemies have questioned people's votes till today, and they are always questioning the elections, and you do not expect the enemies to admit that the elections are healthy. It's interesting to note that there are certain countries that in the middle of the 21st century, they are run in a tribal system. And the country is managed within a tribal system, and they have no similarity to any elections, and even the people of these countries do not know what are the ballot boxes, and they do not know the difference between a box of fruits and a ballot box. And they launch 24-hour television stations, and they speak against us, saying that Iran's elections are not democratic. And this is also an interesting issue nowadays. Another point that must be taken into consideration is that some who are doubtful about participating in the elections or are somehow disappointed. These are the underprivileged, they come from underprivileged strata of the society. I'm aware of this based on surveys. And of course, these people have complaints and they do have certain justified expectations that is related to livelihood, housing, employment, and the country's officials must address these issues, and these people are complaining, and they say that participation may bring about no outcome. I believe that they are right to complain, but their decision is not right. They are right, they are complaining, and the next administration must put the must give priority to these issues. But not attending a breakup with the ballot box will not resolve the problem. If these problems are to be resolved, it will be resolved provided that all the people go to the ballot box and cast a vote in favor of a candidate that we believe can overcome these problems. But if you are complaining, if you refrain from voting, that's not right. I do agree with the complaints, but failure to vote for these complaints, that is not acceptable. The next administration must take up the necessary actions in this regard. The other point is related to the youths. I firmly believe in youths, and I believe that the youths play a leading role and are the driving force, and they play a leading role and they also lead others. And the same is true about elections. That's what I expect from dear youths to encourage the people to participate in the elections and remain active in this regard, particularly those who are going to cast their votes for the first time. We have so many in every round of presidential elections. There's a major portion of the population who are casting their votes for the first time, and their presence in the elections is like the celebrations marking their political obligations. And the other point I wish to mention is that I see that there are some who offer wrong analyses, and they want to actually demotivate the people and disappoint the people. You cannot expect anything else from the enemies, but unfortunately there are some inside the country who offer weak analyses, and they make remarks, and they want to disappoint the people, and they are unwantedly disappointing the people in practice. There's no reason for disappointment. Our nation is a powerful one, has a strong will, and our country has a great deal of strength. We are a powerful state, and in the second phase, the statement related to the second phase of the revolution, I have elaborated on this. We are a great nation, and we are a powerful country with ample capacities. And the enemies are also aware of such capacities, and that includes different sectors. Wherever the nation made a firm decision, it managed to have major accomplishments, and that includes the revolution, the formation of the establishment, Islamic Republic establishment, and the imposed war. And the last point is, the last case was the coronavirus vaccine. Our youths did not wait for the jealous hands of the foreigners to sell vaccines to us. And the officials said that They have purchased the vaccines, but they are not delivering the vaccines. That's the way it goes in the world today. But the youths did not start, and from the very first days, they started making efforts. And they worked hard, and now they have produced vaccines. It was announced that the domestic vaccines have been produced, and I was informed about this, and we are among the five or six countries in the world that can produce the coronavirus vaccine, and are very good infrastructures. I was told that I think every month they can 30 to 50 million doses, they can produce 30 to 50 million doses, and it can be distributed, the vaccines can be distributed among the people. And one of the vaccines produced in recent days have such a capacity. And there are other institutions that are after producing vaccines. This indicates our capabilities. Several years ago, for our radio pharmaceuticals, we were in need of 20% enriched uranium. And there were promises saying that we will give you, and then they refrained to do so, but they failed to deliver the substance to us. And in a few months, our youths managed to produce 20% enrichment. Now they are making ballyhoos and shouting, why did you make 20%? And now they are making 60% for other uses. Of course, all our nuclear uses are peaceful. The same is true about defensive equipment. We were in need of defensive equipment, and they did not sell those equipment to us. I've said this on several occasions. Our young people started working, and they are manufacturing a more effective and capable ones compared to the ones we wanted to obtain from outside the country. One cannot disappoint the nation. And this nation with such a strength, one cannot disappoint the nation, and they are making useless efforts, and those who offer and wrong analyses, they are failing. And I have to conclude at this point about the elections. I just want to address those involved in the electoral process. I have to thank them for their efforts. I have to tell them that you should make all the necessary arrangements in order to observe the health protocols, because the people want to participate, and people's participation must not harm the health of the society. This requires certain arrangements. Of course, this has been announced by the officials, and they are making efforts, and I wish to reemphasize this point. Secondly, another point is related to the electoral slips, and sometimes it is said that there are no electoral slips left, and so this there's a delay in the obtaining those electoral slips, and there should not be shortage of these, and this is another point that must be taken into consideration. Thirdly, regarding, I've been reported to me that in some countries, perhaps in many countries, it's been said there are not the necessary arrangements have not been made. I seriously call on the Interior Ministry and the Foreign Ministry to do the follow-up, because there's no time left. And in these countries, those Iranians who are interested to participate in the elections, they should be provided with the necessary facilities in order to cast their votes. And fourthly, any act of breaching the law must be dealt with. I pray to God to provide us with guidance, to guide our hearts, based on the interests of this country and the nation.
Well, dear listeners, you just heard the speech delivered by the leader of Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, on the eve of Iran's 13th presidential election and the 6th elections for Islamic and village councils. During this speech, the leader of Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, said Iran's, the destiny of a country depends on people's votes in elections. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei added, enemies have always been after interfering in Iran's elections. The leader of Islamic Revolution said, Western media have been trying to question Iran's elections, adding, all Iranians must participate in election regardless of political taste. The leader of Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, said people's participation in elections strengthens country in international arena. He said enemies seek to undermine participation of people in elections to weaken Iran. The leader of Islamic Revolution said our country enjoys abundant potentials and capacities. He said Iranian elections have been quiet, healthy, and competitive. The leader of Islamic Revolution said countries which are governed in tribal way have no elections question Iran's election. He said, the leader of Islamic Revolution urged all Iranians to turn deaf ear to those trying to disappoint them from elections. The leader said Iran's young scientists managed to develop vaccine despite difficulties imposed on the country. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei also urged officials to observe health protocols during presidential election. Dear listeners, many thanks for being with us. Please stay with IRIB English Radio.
Ministry.
Hamas leaders have reportedly warned Egyptian mediators that they would take an important decision regarding the mutual ceasefire in the event Israel continues such unnecessary aggravations by the end of this week. The Palestinian warning came in the wake of the Qataris informing the United Nations and officials in the Biden administration that such a step provokes the Palestinians and pushes towards an explosive situation. The Palestinian message precedes the Egyptians sending invitations to 19 resistance factions to attend high-level meetings in Cairo in the presence of President Mahmoud Abbas to open dialogue between the Palestinian Authority and the resistance factions in Gaza. For the first time, Cairo invites many resistance factions other than Hamas and the Islamic Jihad to attend the dialogues at the request of Hamas, given that all the factions were equal partners in the last battle, despite objections from certain members of the Fatah movement. Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance factions stressed in a joint statement the need to stop all provocations practiced by the occupation in occupied Al-Quds and the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood to stop the aggression against the Palestinian people, to speed up reconstruction, and to lift the siege on Gaza. In the meantime, commander of the southern region in the Israeli occupation forces, Eliezer Toledano, announced that the army was preparing to resume fighting with Hamas again, because apparently what Israel did in the last round of terrorism against Gaza was not enough, adding that the next operation will not end without changing the security reality in Gaza. Adding salt to the injury, right-wing Zionist Jewish groups announced last week that they would redo the flag march they usually did on what they call Jerusalem Day next Thursday, after their provocative march this year was canceled due to heightened tensions. The march is expected to begin at 7 p.m. Al-Quds time on Thursday, June 10, and head through multiple routes towards the Western Wall near the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Israeli occupation forces have reportedly approved the march. However, Palestinian natives have warned that this provocation will only lead to renewed clashes. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. As Palestinian factions prepare for dialogue in Cairo, the invasive scene in Gaza is becoming more complex, foretelling the possibility of another confrontation again in light of Israel's insistence on pushing the Gaza Strip. While all border crossings have been closed since the last aggression, Israel's obstruction of the Qatari fund into Gaza poured fuel on the fire, calling for a strongly worded message from the resistance, in which it affirmed that unless the funds are released by this week, it will be concerned with taking an important decision regarding the cessation of hostilities. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Julia Qasim, political commentator. Thank you for being with us, Julia. Now, the resistance factions have informed the Egyptian and the international mediators that the continuous Israeli provocations toward Gaza and its besieged citizens who are to benefit from the Qatari fund or the grant, which Israel is blocking, which more than 100,000 Palestinian families will be benefiting from, it will directly mean a push towards an escalation of the situation in Gaza. Do you think that Gaza can handle another round of the Israeli terrorism and violence?
Better question is, can the Zionist entity handle another round of Gazan resistance? And the answer is, it knows that it can't. The ceasefire that was called for was a one-sided ceasefire, with the Zionist entity basically begging for it, especially after basically receiving news that not only was the Zionist entity brought to its knees when the Gazan resistance barely even exhausted their old stockpiles, but the whole resistance axis was prepared to also come in on the condition that Gaza would, of course, invite them. But Israel was just definitely not ready to face like another round of rockets, including 300 rockets total fired at once, 150 alone at Tel Aviv. So it was terrified then. It's still terrified now. It's trying to even put pressure to make sure that the resistance doesn't respond to its provocations. And its provocations that we've seen in the last few weeks, including the attacks on Al-Aqsa, the harassment of Palestinians in Sheikh Jarrah and Silwan. It's trying to kind of push the envelope as far as to make itself look scary, but immediately stops once it realizes that the repercussions in another round of fighting could lead to its demise, most certainly. They released Muhammad and Muna al-Kurd within hours of detaining them, and this is out of fear. 2 days ago, the Zionist entity canceled the military parade, and today they were too afraid to even wave their occupier flags in Jerusalem. So I would say that it is actually Israel that is put on the defensive this time.
Well, Julia, the resistance did vow that if the provocations do not stop by the end of this week, it will take an important decision by stopping or just throwing away any kind of cessation of a fire or ceasefire, mind you now. Last week, Isaac Herzog was elected as the new president of the Zionist entity, and it seems that a new government is on the verge of being formed in the Israeli entity. But is it wise for Netanyahu at this moment to get involved in another round of aggression, which he sees the best, maybe the best boat out of this chaos inside of the Israeli regime?
Yeah, so Netanyahu's regime, Netanyahu and his party specifically, the far-right coalition he attempted to assemble up and push the deal of the century, which failed, the provocations against Lebanon, the attacks on resistance factions in Syria and on the Hashd al-Shaabi in Iraq 2 years ago, those have backfired. So Netanyahu right now in an attempt to shore up legitimacy, especially in the face of a multi-factional coalition of the Zionist entity that's attempting to kind of save face of the entity itself in light of Netanyahu's repeated failures. He's just trying to kind of salvage the little legitimacy that he is attempting to have. He has corruption charges, the collapse of his government and his coalition. So what this is essentially is that, like I said, he knows that he can't really stand a chance militarily or even politically at this point. But it's a sad attempt to save face, essentially.
Well, during all these developments, we did see an invitation by Cairo for 19 Palestinian factions from the Gaza Strip that took part in the last battle against Gaza. This meeting is supposed to happen in Cairo in the presence of the Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. And as I told you, most of the factions are invited for the first time in such high-level talks. But some Fatah movement members were vocal about their rejection of such an invitation, meaning a wide-scope invitation allowing all the Palestinian factions in. Is there a chance that these talks might actually be fruitful, given that Abbas still refuses to acknowledge the very last election that happened when Hamas won the elections?
The whole context of the talks reflects the context of the Palestinian resistance and the force on the ground, essentially. So the Palestinian resistance is more united than ever. They have been more united in the face of struggle and in the face of the siege that has last occurred. And it is also clearer than ever that the PA, which is essentially the neo-colonial force, containing Gaza, containing the West Bank at the direction of the occupation, which has collaborated against the Palestinian resistance and the Palestinian people to the benefit of the Zionist occupation, their legitimacy has completely collapsed. And they, just as Israel is more insecure than ever, so is the Palestinian Authority. As a neo-colonial police force that is essentially losing its legitimacy and authority. So see, in the face of a Palestinian resistance that is essentially more unified than ever, it's just clear that these recent remarks and this bitterness by Mahmoud Abbas and the Palestinian Authority reaffirms its lack of stance at all with the Palestinian resistance and with the Palestinian people. And this is something that's consistent.
Well, in the meantime, we had the commander of the southern region of the Israeli occupation forces, his name is Eleazar Toledano, announced that Israel is preparing to resume the fighting against Gaza, and they have in mind that this time they will not allow the security of the resistance to remain intact inside of the Gaza Strip. So we're talking about massacres here, a continuation of the incremental genocide by the Israeli entity against the people of Gaza. Sayyid Nasrallah was very clear. The Secretary General of Hezbollah said in his last appearance that there will be a regional war if the Zionist entity provokes the Palestinian people, whether it is in Gaza or in Al-Quds. But he was very clear, Al-Quds equals a regional war. Do you think that we are on the verge of the biggest war that this region has ever seen?
You know, I think that I'm positive that the Zionist entity's talks right now, you know, it wanting to be provocative, it's just empty talk, essentially, because it understands, and the resistance has made it clear, Yahya Sinwar of Hamas and Sayyid Nasrallah have made it very, very clear, along with other leaders of the resistance axis, that there is full support and coordination from all members of the resistance axis to the resistance factions in Gaza. And this will be furthered into a complete campaign to liberate Palestine and Al-Aqsa should Israel fall completely through on its provocations and wage another attack of the same nature. We're to see that becoming more clear by the end of this week. But it is definitely clear that the Zionist entity, though they do not want to have any kind of provocations that's going to make them instantly lose, they still kind of want to save face. I mean, the entity begged for a ceasefire just because settlers, were tired of running to bunkers.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, it's just a balance that the Zionist entity is trying to have of saving face and trying to make itself look like it has any legitimacy left, which it doesn't, can ensure any protection of its illegal settlers, which it can't. And the resistance, which is on the verge of victory right now, we can envision victory as Lebanese, as Palestinians. And there is full preparation to achieve it and attain it if the Zionist entity makes any stupid moves.
Well, it's going to be a very decisive week indeed. Thank you very much, Julia Qasim from Beirut, political commentator, talking to us about the prospects of another ignition of fire between the Palestinians and the Israeli Zionist entity. Thank you very much for being with us. Please stay tuned. Next, we will be talking about Yemen being part of the equation of Al-Quds.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts.
Now, leader of the Ansarullah movement, Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi, announced that the Yemeni people are part of the deterrence equation established by regional resistance in linking the Israeli threat towards al-Quds to a regional war. Sayyid Houthi criticized the Saudi and the Emirati media and their shameful handling of the recent Israeli aggression on Gaza while praising the Iranian position. Sayyid Houthi also identified three steps to attain peace in Yemen by stopping the Saudi aggression, lifting the siege, and ending the occupation. More in this following report.
Leader of Yemen's Ansarullah movement, Sayyid Abdul Malik Badreddin al-Houthi, stressed last week that the Yemenis are part of the Al-Quds formula, as announced by Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah, and will be present effectively in the battle against the Zionist entity. Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah consecrated, during his speech on the 21st anniversary of Resistance and Liberation Day, a new formula. If Israel tampers with Al-Quds, it will face a regional war. Sayyid Houthi indicated that Hezbollah and the Palestinian resistance were not supported by any Arab or Muslim state except Iran and Syria, highlighting the importance of the recent victory in Gaza. Leader of Yemen's Ansarullah movement then urged Muslim countries to join forces against Israel in order to expel its regime from the occupied West Bank and East Al-Quds and to completely boycott the Tel Aviv regime. The Yemeni leader noted that the pro-Israeli traitors accuse the resistance forces of being Iran's proxy groups, adding that the Takfiri war launched against them only serves the U.S. and Israel. Meanwhile, Sayyid Houthi stressed that the peaceful solution in Yemen can be reached when the Saudi-led coalition halts its war and blockade on the Yemenis, adding that the Yemeni nation will not give up its right to freedom, independence, and dignity, and will not abandon its struggle against American and Israeli plots. Furthermore, in an indication of positive developments in the ongoing negotiations to stop the Saudi war in Yemen, an Omani delegation arrived in the Yemeni capital Sana'a on a visit, the first of its kind in years, on Saturday. The delegation was accompanied to Sana'a Airport by the spokesman of the Ansarullah Resistance Movement and the head of the Sana'a negotiating delegation, Muhammad Abdus Salam, on a plane belonging to the Omani Royal Air Force. Upon his arrival at Sana'a Airport, Abdus Salam said that the delegation of the Royal Office came to discuss the situation in Yemen on the basis of the principle of common interests. Abdus Salam noted that the aim of the Omani delegation's visit was to work on advancing the humanitarian situation as well as the peace process.
Now to discuss this issue with us from Sana'a is Mr. Muhammad Ashami, political commentator. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Muhammad. Now, Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi made it clear that Yemen will be part of the deterrence equation established by Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah in linking the Israeli threat towards al-Quds to a regional war. Are we going to see Yemeni ballistic missiles landing in the occupied territories of Palestine against the Zionist entity?
Israeli occupation forces take those warnings lightly from both Sayyid Nasrullah and Sayyid al-Houthi, and I believe we may see defense operations and ballistic missiles, drone attacks as well, following the Zionist forces from Yemen. The remarks by both leaders reflect a higher improved level of coordination amongst the resistance access and affirms that Yemen today is a strong integral part of this new equation.
Well, Mr. Mohammed, Sayyid Abdul Malik went on to say that the Saudi and the Emirati media outlets took up a hostile position towards the Palestinian people, and especially the Palestinian resistance factions inside of Gaza who were were bombing retaliatory rocket attacks against the Israeli entity, proving their allegiance to the Zionist regime. Sadly, I'm talking about the media and the Persian Arab Gulf states. This strategy was surely part of the normalization process which these states have started with the Zionist entity last year. Do you think this strategy was enough maybe to subdue their citizens into accepting ties with this warmongering entity that committed massacres against the Palestinian people?
We all noticed that both Saudi and the Emirati exerted a very high level of media effort trying to spread their propaganda against Iran and the Palestinian resistance, while covering up also at the same time for the war crimes committed by the Israeli occupation. This in itself can be taken as an indication that there are many people inside Saudi and the UAE who do not probably buy into this narration, Zionist Arab version of the narration, especially following the resistance latest victory in Gaza, and the increasing awareness that Iran has been actually at the heart of Palestine, supporting and assisting its resistance. So no, I don't think that people are buying that narration.
Well, something very important happened on Saturday is the landing of Omani plane, on board of which is Omani committee alongside the spokesperson of the Ansarullah movement, which breaks way for serious negotiations and dialogue to end the Saudi war on Yemen. What are your views on this?
The Omani delegation that has just arrived with the head of the national delegation, Mohammed Abdel Salam, they arrived a couple of days back, and they said that they are continuing the discussions they had started in Muscat. Mohammed Abdel Salam did not comment much about it, but he implied in his brief comments that they will be discussing first the humanitarian issues, and hopefully if the coalition is serious about it this time, then this may lead to opening other discussions leading to complete ceasefire and bringing back peace to Yemen. We hope that they are serious about it this time.
Sayyid Abdel Malik al-Houthi did identify three very important steps for peace in Yemen, which includes stopping the Saudi aggression, lifting the blockade and the siege of the Yemeni population, and ending the occupation. He means the Saudi and the Emirati occupation of Yemeni land. Mohammed bin Salman has turned several opportunities down that would have made this halting of an aggression at least somewhat easier than bringing it to this level right now. What is Mohammed bin Salman really counting on that would secure him a political gain, which for the past 6 years he had never been able to attain on the field, in the battlefield of Yemen?
Well, let's agree on one thing first. Saudi has lost its military war in Yemen. On the other hand, Yemen counterattacks are becoming more severe, more frequent, and more painful. So what are the options for Saudi? Causing maximum humanitarian damage to 30 million people, and that's what they are trying to do. They use that to negotiate military terms. For example, they say, okay, we will release you some of the fuel vessels, provided you stop advancing towards Marib, which is ridiculous. Sayyid Abdel Malik met the UN representative, Mr. Martin Griffith, last Sunday, and he warned him against continuing to exploit the humanitarian issues of the people. And he affirmed that this will not get them any gains, political gains. And he said that if they continue this, it only means that they are not serious about bringing back peace to Yemen or ending their war.
Well, in the meantime, the Yemeni armed forces are making great advances in the northern governorate of Ma'rib, while also simultaneously achieving groundbreaking reconciliation with many Yemeni tribes in that governorate, which means that less fighting is ahead, which means more reconciliation is to be viewed in the future. How significant do you think the liberation of Ma'rib will be in changing the balance of power in this ongoing Saudi onslaught of Yemen?
It's very important. The liberation of Ma'rib can significantly alter the whole political terrain, and most probably will determine the subsequent outcomes for years to come. The governorate is oil-rich, and it has been used as a stronghold by the coalition for their military operations for the past 6-7 years. Losing it means losing a major source of finance. It also means that the forces that are there will be outcasted. There are several mix of mercenary groups that are fighting alongside the coalition, including Al-Qaeda. And if they are outcasted from Marib, they will not have an alternative place to be in. If they go towards the south, they are not welcomed, and that will further complicate the problems that the coalition is already facing with its different factions there.
But would you think that a liberation of Marib would actually complicate the dialogue, the peace process in Yemen?
No, actually it will foster it, I think, because they are trying to protect Marib with every level of strength that they have. I think it will be a very good gain, because they will not have any more strong points to negotiate on.
Well, the very important issue in this negotiation that is to be taking place, if it is already taking place, is the humanitarian status inside of Yemen. As you mentioned before, there are more than 13 million civilians in Yemen on the verge of complete starvation. What do you think will be the biggest challenge for Ansarullah in the event of a ceasefire?
In the event of a ceasefire, there will be a challenge of inclusion. Let's say the goal would be to include all the political parties and resume the peace process again.
Mm-hmm.
It is that peace process, if you remember, before this military intervention by Saudi, that was going under UN supervision, and almost the previous, the ex UN representative Jamal bin Omar said, Yemenis were about to reach a historical consensus, a peaceful agreement, when this military action started on March 2015. So if they stop their aggression, I think it would be less of a challenge to resume that peace process and include everybody, but in terms of level terms, not with domination coming from Saudi or the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you very much, Mr. Mohammed Shami, political commentator who joined us from Sana'a to talk about the prospects of talks, negotiations, and complete cessation of a war against Yemen, and also the inclusion of Yemen in the Al-Quds versus a regional war equation set up by the Secretary General of Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Shami, and thank you. Please stay tuned next week for more from the Mideast Stream.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.